Have you ever covered a carpet stain with a rug, ignored a leaky faucet, pretended your half-painted living room is supposed to look like that? Well, you're not alone. We've all got unfinished home projects, but there's an easier way. When you download Thumbtack, it's easier to care for your home from top to bottom. Pull out your phone and in just a few taps, you can search, chat, and book highly rated pros right in your neighborhood. Plus, you'll know what to tackle next, because Thumbtack is the app that shows you what to do, who to hire, and when. So say goodbye to all those unfinished home projects, and say hello to caring for your home the easier way. Download Thumbtack and start a project today.
VR training platforms, like the one developed by Fundamental VR and Orbis International, are helping surgeons train over and over before operating on real patients.
As you practice each skill, the muscle memory starts to develop.
Learn more at meta.com/metaverseimpact.
We're coming, and we ain't backing down.
We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Yeah, looking in the mirror.
I'm bitterly disappointed with the officiating today.
Guys being dudes.
And they run through our like through a tin horn, man.
Thank you, Lee.
You know, I really do feel a little lighter these days. Like I'm floating on air. Like I have a significant kind of like lack of responsibility that just randomly came out of nowhere. Lightened my load, just became less onerous upon my day-to-day schedule. And it's something that I wasn't expecting. Thanks, Jim.
Is it the Jim Harbaugh is gone now?
Got eliminated.
Thanks, Jim. I appreciate
it. Yeah, I knew it. I knew you were going there.
I really do.
That's Richard Johnson of Sports Illustrated. This is Stephen Godfrey on my other side. Stephen, how are you?
Hi, I was trying to make the Jags joke.
Well,
it's all right.
Tough.
Vrabel's gone. The bad man can't hurt me anymore.
And I am Alex Kirshner.
Dude, hold on. Stick a pin in that. What?
Sorry.
What
Alex.
On
sorry, Alex.
Earth? Guys,
I am genuinely sorry, Alex.
You know when your team like fires a coach and every other fan base cheers? That's the rest of us, Titans fans. We are all so happy that probably the most alarmingly competent non-Pittsburgh Steelers AFC football team of the last 4 or 5 years is now not going to be annoyingly competent. Thank you to the Tennessee Titans brass. What's her name? Amy Strunk?
Amy Adams Strunk.
Yes.
That's right.
Can't wait for when we do our off-season meetings with like analysts and data firms and surveys and marketing people. And they're like, maybe you shouldn't start every college football show with a 6-minute fucking tirade about the AFC South.
It's our company.
We should. We should move on.
What are you going to do? Fire me?
It is funny to me when all of these NFL teams get into like their second or third or fourth generation of family ownership. And you're like, which Ford, which Adams, which Rooney, which crap? There's just so many of them.
What's cool about this hasn't happened yet, but I was made aware when I was traveling last year that like this happens in Europe for like soccer team ownership, and you're gonna like eventually have in America what you have in Europe, which is like some beloved soccer team is gonna fall to the ownership of like a 26-year-old DJ. Like that's gonna happen. That's gonna happen in America one day, where it's just gonna be like somebody with a fucking SoundCloud is gonna end up owning a major sports franchise by default.
Brother, Tony Khan's a heartbeat away from the presidency.
Dude, you know, this is an interesting difference.
In here because he has not managed AEW well. That's for a different podcast.
An interesting difference between their sports over there and our sports over here is that on the one hand, the owners of European soccer teams at the highest level are often some truly bad dudes in ways that the NFL, for instance, does not yet allow because they don't allow
Russian, you know,
like sovereign wealth funds and oligarchs to own teams.
Yeah.
I meant, sure. But they can only do so much. Like they can't really move teams. Like for instance, like Manchester City's golf ownership can't really move Manchester City if they don't get a stadium deal they don't like, because it just wouldn't work. You know, like you can't be like, oh, we're Manchester City, but now we're playing in the Cotswolds or wherever they would move them to. That probably wouldn't be it.
Deep pool.
Fucking but like,
so you just can't do that. One of the best books I've read in the last, I don't know, 5 years was The Club, which was by these two Wall Street Journal reporters about like the business of European soccer. And that's the one charming thing. Also, when their fans see something they don't like European soccer fans, like they will be so forceful in their demonstrations that sometimes the owners of the teams just won't do it.
Yeah, man.
Like, that's super.
That was my thing.
It's called stabbing.
We're soft.
This was my thing.
More people should be stabbed.
My thing during realignment. Your little tweets are nice. They are in the streets, man. They are marching upon the thing. Yeah. Streamers and flares in hand, storming the Bastille. Like,
Talk to me when you set off a flare in church, Tallahassee. That's when I know you're going to be serious about leaving the ACC. All right.
Some news in the sport that we actually cover this week. Since you guys recorded your emergency podcast about Jim Harbaugh's resignation at Michigan last week, Michigan has gone ahead and laid the ball up into the hoop and promoted Sharon Moore to be the next head coach there. I believe he was already the first black head coach in the history of Michigan football, but now he is the first permanent long run black head coach in the history of Michigan football. So that is very significant.
Wait, did Michigan fix racism?
Yes, exactly. That's what happened. Wow. But that's very significant. You know, for a legacy program, the team that played in the first Rose Bowl so it's a significant thing. And I want to acknowledge that. Richard, a lot of their fans, Michigan's fans, I think, have been really bummed in the last handful of days because Harbaugh is taking staff with him. Like Jesse Minter is going with him, the defensive coordinator, and the strength coach, Ben Herbert, who seems to be very praised and highly regarded for kind of making them the smash mouth physical athlete that they were. He's going too, to the Chargers. A lot of their fans are very angry at Ward Manuel. Is that reasonable?
First of all, no, because if you were a college football coach and you got the chance to not recruit, trust me, you would take that opportunity too.
Strength coach, though?
Here's my thing with the
same thing, man. It's easier.
Here's my thing with the strength coach. So, you know, in some ways, Godfrey, it's actually not. Because as an NFL strength coach, you have to deal with something that you don't in college, which is in the same way you have to deal with player agency. But the player agency with strength coaches in the NFL is different because the players have their own strength coaches that they actually see.
Some do.
The younger ones who are – the practice squad guy does not have his own trainer. But you know what I mean. The players you give a shit about have an insane amount of agency and knowledge and understanding, a lot of them, with their bodies and their own training staffs.
Mm-hmm.
That you have to deal with and contend with as a strength coach in the NFL. So, and like, look, man, you both are and aren't going to make an NFL player like tough. Like Dominic Foxworth, who played in the league for a while and is on ESPN all the time. He actually has a great bit about this. It's like, we're in the NFL, man. Like we're fucking tough. We've been tough. It's not like you get raw 17 and a half year old who's just away from mom for the first time and you can really sort of toughen him up. Like you're dealing with maybe young grown men, but grown men, like they're in the NFL for God's sake. But I will say this.
Yeah.
Strength coaches in the myth of the strength coach is very interesting to me because there's no real metric for their success. And so it's very easy to overestimate or underestimate how much sway and impact in your program the strength coach really has. And because head coaches always say, like, he's my main consigliere, and obviously from a time perspective, he does spend more time with the players in a very crucial offseason period than a head coach just by NCAA rules. It's really easy, I think, to get strength coach influence, like, either out of whack or like not talk about it at all. And I'm not even like, that's not even a criticism so much as it's an observation. Like, I just think I've always thought it's actually really interesting how we regard the strength coach.
At the pro level, they're more, evaluators on behalf of the franchise, whereas at the college level, one, you have to deal with more bodies. You're in charge of more actual physical bodies because college rosters are larger. You have a walk-on program. You have all this other stuff. I think, to Richard's point, are tasked with more in sort of a dumb expectations kind of way at a lot of programs because of the mythos built in the last 10 to 15 years. I mean, you can go all the way back to the Nebraska stuff in the 60s and 70s, but now it's like, you had the Tommy Moffat thing, which became a cult. Then you had offshoots of that, rival ideas. Do you remember the giant New York Times article about Stanford a couple years ago at the height of the Shaw era, like using body weight resistance to lessen injuries for a smash mouth football team? Yes, to Richard's point, some of it got out of whack in terms of the sort of silliness that we ascribe to it, whereas it is also simultaneously absolutely necessary.
Right. I'm glad you mentioned that. I mean, look, this is somebody who has put it out. I mean, I wrote 3,500 words about Boyd Epley last year. You know what I mean? Like, it's like,
goddamn.
That's Nebraska's Jesus. Long ago strength coach who built sort of the war machine strength program at Nebraska that everyone copied.
Yes, basically, the Sorry, strength Nebraska. Coach who, when I say the strength coach, it's basically Boyd Epley.
Yes.
He really injected a lot of life into that program, I would say. Okay. Just the way that he did things was crucial for Nebraska's growth.
Let me get one in before we move on. You are a dumbass if you think that people aren't going to take NFL jobs over college jobs. And you're especially a dumbass if you're high on your own supply as an alumnus, thinking that you have the most magical football place in the world when you won one national title. This happens to national title winners. And when you take jobs somewhere else, the coaches are going to take staff with them. So get your head out of your ass and stop blaming your otherwise incompetent AD, because this time it wasn't his fault. Once again, you are not the center of the universe. Disengage your head from your ass.
The point about the AD is interesting to me, because Michigan fans, you might have noticed, you know, as we've talked about, are a fairly argumentative bunch. And so are we all. I mean, who among us? Sort of been on a, you know, fuck you, stop talking bent about a lot of criticism of their program for a few months now.
Yeah, they won the national championship, of course.
And that's fine. And that's totally fine. Again, I'm not even criticizing it.
Yeah, but that's hilarious too. Like, we all stop making fun of Georgia or Alabama or Auburn or LSU when they won national? No, double down.
I want to finish this thought.
Being a baby.
But there is one part of Michigan that if you say, this is garbage, they're terrible here, like, this guy doesn't know what he's doing, no Michigan fan will argue with you. And that's the AD. Like, none of them seem to like this guy at all. And I asked around, like, what is the source of his staying power? Because remember, in addition to the number of, let's call them, scandal adjacent things with football and apparently not being that close with Jim Harbaugh, he also hired the hockey coach whose program has been embroiled in scandal in the last year or two. He put his foot in his mouth a time or two, talking about important things into a microphone and got to meet for that. And it doesn't seem to have like a constituency of people who are like, wow, we love this athletic director. And I was like, so why does this work? And people pointed out a couple things to me. One was that the last guy, Dave Brandon, was, you know, very bad, like a memorably terrible athletic director who was responsible for quite a lot of problems for Michigan, especially in football. And also just inertia, which is a good point. Like, you can kind of survive as like a not that well-liked AD for a long time in this world if you just sort of keep money coming in and don't make too many enemies.
Well, he's also,
do you remember,
that was intriguing to me,
close with the school's president, which is his boss, which is the point.
Do you remember when not being close to Jim Harbaugh was considered an asset in Michigan's administration? Because that was like 3.5 years ago.
Other Big Ten coaching news this week: Iowa's offensive coordinator search to replace Brian Ferentz wraps up after about 100 days. It took basically the same amount of time that it usually takes a president to pass some landmark legislation in their first couple of months in office for Iowa to get a new offensive coordinator. And this was kind of I'm not going to say a bad resolution for them, but kind of a funny resolution for them, because it takes them all this time.
It was fucking bad, Alex.
From one perspective,
liar.
At least from all right. Well, okay. We can argue about that in a second. Let's talk about that in a second. It takes them a long time to replace maybe the most reviled coordinator in college football in many, many years. You know, a straight up Nepo hire who had no business continuing in this job for the last several years and did, and everyone in this fan base desperately wanted him gone. everyone associated with the school except for the guy who mattered seemed to want him gone. Kirk Ferentz is photographed in Iowa City last week meeting with Kevin Johns, who had been the offensive coordinator at Duke these past few years, two very good results with Riley Leonard at quarterback and Mike Elko as the head coach. And a lot of the Iowa fans think that this is what's going to happen. You know, I think typically if you're meeting in public places and getting photographed and he's literally on campus, that's a pretty good indicator that a guy's got a pretty good chance to get the job. Instead, Iowa winds up with Tim Lester, who is best known for following PJ Fleck at Western Michigan. At the time, Western Michigan was coming off the year where they had gone, I think, 14-1 and played in the Cotton Bowl and were the top of the G5. Under Lester, they peak at 8-4. He gets fired after, I think, a 5-7 in 2022. Did have some good offenses there, and he's an offensive coordinator now. So to be clear, absolutely had some pretty effective offenses at Western Michigan. I remember them scoring a billion points on Pitt the year that Pitt lost to them and then went on the ACC championship run. And they did have some pretty good offenses. But it has been a long time since he has coordinated or coordinated successfully a power conference offense. And they got the fan base excited about getting this guy from Duke, who had done such a nice job the last couple of years with Leonard. So Iowa fans did not seem happy about this, which is very funny that you could manage to kind of message it that way, where people wouldn't be happy, given that he's replacing literal Brian Ferentz.
I got
a Steven, you think it's a bad hire?
Couple things.
This is a trick question.
I don't know. It could be. I think it's at least a defensible hire, but the messaging was.
I think it's a very defensible hire here. Okay. He did.
I think we're tripping over this bar, this standard.
He did good stuff at Duke. Okay. Yes. He had a really good quarterback. That makes things a lot easier. Not saying he didn't do anything. Saying it makes it a lot easier. What Iowa's offense. What gives me optimism?
Deep breath.
About Iowa's offense. Woo. And Jesus, why, God. Alex? And I think Alex said the same thing. I thought they were going to be a lot better before the season started.
I said take it to the bank, and I'm saying it again.
Yeah.
He was supposed to hit that quota. It was designed for him to hit that quota.
It has to happen.
When you are as good and as consistent as Iowa is up front, it should not be this hard. Like, it just should.
Did you say at some point it has to happen?
Yes, it has to, Steven.
Hold on. I want to be very specific about what it is. What is it?
80th best offense in the country. Has to happen.
Okay, you guys are acting like this is like Michael Crichton chaos theory, like eventually life will find a way. No, just hire a fucking competent coordinator and get some off. Like, this isn't that hard. You don't need the chaotic mathematical whims of nature to, like, one day an aberration in the ecosystem provides Iowa with more than 17 points a game. It's not that hard. It's not. Just don't, like, the Lester hire is fine, I guess. I'm laughing less at that. Less at Lester than I am at the idea of Johns or anyone else, one, getting the job, and two, creating the kind of offense that would be considered not embarrassing under the same.
Yeah, man. Like, hey, the culture, spoiler alert.
The culture is the culture is the culture.
Spoiler alert, folks. Kirk Ferentz was not hiring Sean Lewis or the Sean Lewis facsimile thereof in this.
God, that would have fucking ruled so hard. God, that would have. Can you imagine after a year dealing with Dion? Then you go and work for Ferentz? Sean Lewis is the masochist?
I think what was a reasonable hope, and maybe this works out in the same vein, was that they would get someone who has run pretty good beefy boy offenses at different schools. I think like Tim Polasek, who had been their O-line coach and was like shared the staff with Brian before he went off to Wyoming a couple years ago and he just became North Dakota State's head coach. Like, that was one archetype of person. I'm not saying they should have hired him. I'm just suggesting, like, you know, I don't think that no Iowa fan in the world thought they were going to hire Sean Lewis.
Alex, Wyoming has proven to be more dynamic with their offense.
Yes.
That's the problem. And the reason why is that you had someone who was very much considered to be like old school, hard edge, defensive minded curmudgeon in the recently retired Craig Bull, And yet they embraced more schematic and conceptual diversity to create positive results than what is allowed in the Ferentz culture. You were not going to ever see a significant jump in offensive statistics consistently and against quality opponents as long as the Ferentz apparatus is in place. So I guess I was laughing more at the idea that, like, you know what? Like, Kirk is never going to have a Bob Stoops moment. And the younger of you among us might associate Bob Stoops with the Big 12 that was, right? Yeah. 56 to 53.
Funny.
It didn't start that way, y'all.
They won a national Bob championship Stoops, 13-2.
I watched it. Like, Bob Stoops was Florida's defensive coordinator and came in and installed as reductive a sort of style of complementary football between offense and defense that you could at the time, and it worked until it didn't. And he actually, it's kind of weird now that I think about this as we record, he predates, Saban gets all the fucking credit in the world for the adjustment post-Manziel, post-Newton, like when Freeze comes in, and they remember the beefy boy linebacker thing and all, right? We talk about, like, he hires Lane Kiffin, and like the whole offense kind of ran through Amari Cooper in 14. Great. Bob Stoops looked around the Big 12, and he was like, shit fire, if I don't adapt to being the best 7-on-7, program in a 7-on-7 culture, then I'm in trouble. And so, like, that was a pivotal shift and really defines, like, the latter decade of Stoops's career. It adds to the longevity and the success. I know they didn't get a title out of that run, but they definitely maintained what top 10 status for another decade. Yeah. That is never going to happen under Kirk Ferentz ever.
Kingsbury, Iowa offensive coordinator.
God, again, that would fucking rule.
Next year, this year actually, it's 2024, October 12th, Saturday, the Washington Huskies go to Kinnick Stadium. That is one of the most interesting look-ahead games to just ponder what both of those teams might look like on the entire 2024 calendar.
I think I got a good idea.
I don't think so at all.
I think I got a good idea. I've got a really good idea.
My point is, if Washington's offense takes like the kind of step back that is possible.
What happens when you, like, lose Iowa the could, entire offense to the NFL?
Iowa could drag them to hell in that game.
But
I'm intrigued
always
by
do
if
that.
Iowa can
that's
score
I,
points. Because Iowa Iowa has like an Ohio State road game this year, and it would be nice if they could maybe muck it up a bit. That has not happened in the recent past.
Maybe I need to be clear, not to you, Alex, but to the audience. They're still going to be Iowa. They are going to, as you said, drag. It's like someone's going to come into Iowa City and either lose by a field goal under 40 total, or they're going to win by becoming Iowa. I've said that for years. Yeah. Do you remember the Saquon Barkley era at Penn State? There was a game where they had to go to Iowa City and they won the game in like a very Iowa way. It was like a 13-3, you know, 9-7 type. That's not uncommon. Ohio State has done that before. When you go to Iowa City, you wave at them poor kids in the hospital who basically should file suit against the university for having to watch that football while they're dealing with life-threatening illnesses. And then you play Iowa football to escape Iowa. All that is still going to be there. They're still going to have really good offensive linemen. Still going to have a really good defense. Still going to have good tight ends. They're still going to be Iowa's fuck. I just think now, actually, let me pose this if you really want to inspire some existential dread, which who doesn't, right? They've got a great MFA program. Who are you going to blame now? If the offense doesn't improve, let it be marginal.
Well,
who are you going to blame
Kirk.
Now?
Probably Kirk.
Right, but it was always Nepo hire and the Nepo. Like, we just need to get another OC in there.
They, I don't
There's
know.
A whole quotient of
guys.
Iowa fans
blame
who will
Barta.
Not blame Kirk.
I think that
Richard Johnson thing over it's like, with Gundy. It's like, well, unify our Kirk, you realize how fast things
That's
get
right.
shitty for you.
Before it was the Gundy one. The original was the Iowa.
It was Kirk. It was Kirk. Yeah.
The original one I made that point about was Iowa. Yeah. So
all I'm saying is I don't think a damn thing's going to change, and I don't think they're going to look at. I don't think they're going to look at much different. They might be more competent, I think, in terms of like their down package. I'm trying not to laugh. I think if their down packages, I think they might have more run pass versatility in early downs.
I think they will run more RPO, and I do think they will start to embrace that a little bit more, maybe a lot bit more, because they probably run any of that right now, so maybe it's a lot bit more.
If you don't think Kirk won't have that harness like this, like, why do you think he hired this guy? instead of someone who's maybe younger and more dynamic and more prone to author an offense? Like, come on, man. You already know the answer to this question.
One other bit of coordinator news this week under the wire, reported on Monday night by ESPN's Chris Lowe. I'll just quote, Hugh Freeze is hiring DJ Durkin to be Auburn football's defensive coordinator. Sources tell ESPN it will be Durkin's fourth different stint as a DC in the SEC. He was at Texas A&M the past two seasons, Ole Miss the two seasons prior to that, and Florida in 2013-14. End of quote. There may have been another stop or two on DJ Durkin's professional journey, and we will talk about that on the Split Zone Duo Substack at splitzoneduo.com soon.
Alex is cooking one. If you are not a member of our community at splitzoneduo.com, Alex, I think I'm as a ranter, as the preeminent ranter of this program, I'm very proud of and excited for what Alex is cooking.
I just think that we kind of allude to DJ Durkin a lot and tweet about, oh, DJ Durkin, why'd they hire him? We're gonna talk about that in some more detail at splitzoneduo.com. And there's tons of other stuff that we put up on the Substack on a weekly, frequent basis. Godfrey, you are cooking up a single wing for our wonderful Substack paying subscribers just in the next couple of hours. That will be out in the next probably day or two as we record this right now on Tuesday morning. Newsletters frequently, Q&A opportunities, all kinds of stuff. It is a great way not just to support the show, but to get a lot more of it and to help us make it. So we would love to have you at splitzoneduo.com. Also, I want to say thank you to our partners at Homefield Apparel. I think this is the first time the three of us have actually podcasted together since we were in Houston for SCD Live presented by Homefield a couple weeks ago. Is that right?
So, well, Saban retired. But
yeah.
Oh, right. Saban retired. Yeah, Saban retired right after that. Yeah.
A minor thing happened.
God, that feels like a minor thing. And a half ago. Holy cow.
Dude, this sport never stopped. It honestly, like, I get asked by, like, I'll see, like, my parents' friends or something like that. And they'll be like, so you podcast about college football. So what do you do from January to August? It's like, well,
nothing.
College football. Increasingly, it feels like June feels quiet a lot of the years. I feel like eventually even June is going to get eaten. Like some SEC coach is going to resign in the middle of June. It's going to be a truly year-round sport. Like the NFL.
By the way, if you're on the for the YouTube viewers, I do want to also acknowledge apparently our other podcast sponsor, these water bottles. These Ala Walla water bottles that my two co-hosts have been drinking out of. Dude, these, like, it's like it's you're not Stanley
not
Cup,
a sponsor.
But you're Stanley Cup adjacent. Like, so, and I bring this up because
We have the same bottle.
So,
do you think I bought you know most of my life. Do you think I bought that?
My mom has had these bottles for ages. For the record, I'm not on
track. So she's a water bottle hipster now.
I think that I just want to get credit for the fact that the Owalas have been in my family since before those were being talked about.
I stay in trouble with white women enough, so I'm going to sit this second
What I'm
out.
Doing here is making sure that the algorithm picks up Stanley Cup, Stanley Cup, Stanley Cup, Starbucks, Stanley Cup, Target, Stanley Cup, Stanley Cup, TikTok.
Oh, okay, well done.
Oh, very smart for YouTube.
Taylor Swift.
Well, we'll get to that next week at the Super Bowl.
Let's talk about our dear friends at Homefield Apparel, though. I am wearing a freshly arrived Homefield tee. Richard, you are wearing a Homefield tee. Godfrey, what are you rocking today?
Why are we always on the brand? Y'all are always just doing – I still wear my school stuff.
Well, because I want to be like Rob Lowe at that NFL playoff game wearing the NFL hat. That's me in my Homefield stuff.
Alex wants to be Rob Lowe. That's what I took from that. I have the long sleeve tee on, and then during the ice storm – in Nashville, I was rocking. Look, it's right off camera here. I got just my classic Jordan. That's like my uniform, the Georgia Southern hoodie. The long sleeve tee, they become, I think, the unsung staple of the home fields.
I agree.
Like roster.
I might even say it's my favorite thing in their arsenal.
Good on just like a 45 degree winter day where it's like I never want to be hot. I always want to layer correctly. And so also I like black clothes. I usually just if I'm not. I wear Homefield on the show, but normally I'm just wearing black. And so this is a black Virginia Tech shirt. And so it gets a lot of wear. Go Hokies.
SCD20 is the promo code at Homefield. Just go to homefieldapparel.com. Thank you so much to Homefield. Tremendous partners of our show now and always. We very much appreciate them. And also Nokian Tires, who we were blessed to have with us in Houston as well I forget if I got the chance to say this at the show or if I said it afterward, but what I so appreciate about Nokian Tyres is they are always innovating in the building of shoes for your car, which are especially crucial at this time of year, as people in much of the country will know. They put so much time and care into R&D, and we talk a lot in college football about certain tire companies that spend their money on promotional activities like blimps or things of that nature. Nokian Tyres' attention, aside from being very discerning about the college football podcast that they advertise with, they put their money into test tracks north of the Arctic Circle to make sure that your car has the best chance possible of remaining on the ground where it is supposed to remain when you are driving it in tough conditions. Nokian, we greatly appreciate you.
I thought you were reading off of like a script, and then you said car shoes, and then you also tried to start like a rap war with another tire. I was like, no, that's off his dome.
I will say I did see that blimp.
Yeah, you
for the
almost
tire company that we won't name.
Crashed your car while on the phone with me. Dude, when you
I
saw
did
that
drive
blimp.
Past it. I drove past it parked in like Southern California right before the Rose Bowl, and I was like, what the fuck?
Jesus Christ,
like this blimp is just sitting there next to the highway. It was shocking. But fortunately, I was driving a car with Nokian tires, and so my shock did not materialize in the car doing anything other than continuing to grip the
and
road.
Scaring and both me edge. And your passenger, who were worried about
another
your safety.
Another terrifying prospect for Southern California is another Northeasterner who doesn't drive much moving out there and getting behind the wheel.
I drive brought quite a lot, Nokia. And I have a spotless record. I was pulled over in 2017 for not signaling.
How did that
but
go?
At trial, I did beat the charges.
You went to trial?
They called it the trial of the century. It was Alexander Kirshner versus the state of Pennsylvania.
Well, okay, the whole show is stopping, and I don't give a shit. It's
new
January.
Podcast. New show.
Have questions brought to you by
Where? First of all, where was it?
Where? What state were
in
you
suburban
in?
Suburban
Pittsburgh.
County?
It's okay.
Suburban basically,
okay.
I was doing a delivery
so
job.
No. I will ask the question. Is this? Were you in one of those townships? Like, is that how it goes?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this is the equivalent to like a local sheriff's department pulls you over. You are how old at this point?
I must have been 22, 23.
Okay.
Not even 20.
Are
20.
You
so like home from are, home are we, from college? Just driving.
Are we
yeah,
doing
it was a summer
are we,
job?
Are we doing the typical like overly ridiculously polite Alex Kirshner who has anxiety about offending someone? Or
no,
are you
he
in
knew
sort
he's
of your
no,
plate?
No, no. He knew he was about to fight this shit. He knew he was about
and
to
I was
take
say,
it to the
is
man.
It, or
exactly. He said,
or was this? This weird thing happens with white men when they get pulled over, where you do your version of ACAB.
Yeah, he knew
like,
he went in the end.
You get the haughty, like, how dare you? Which one was it? Was it, oh, I'm so sorry, sir, I didn't see that? Or was it like, what the fuck do you want,
I think you know what it was.
He knew he'd win in the end. He played the long game.
Did you slide the license out the crack in the window, and then you were just like, it shut the fuck up Friday?
I apologized. Very simple, Steven. And I think as I grew older, I would realize that this was quite an example of my privilege in this society. I went to trial. I apologized to the judge and the police officer was there. I said, I'm sure he didn't make it up and pull me over for nothing, but this fine is $150. That's more than I made today. I'm wondering if you could lower it. Of course, he couldn't lower it. It was statutory. So he just said, you know what? I think I'm going to make your day today. You're innocent.
This is amazing. So you didn't pay anything?
No, I didn't. I mean, I paid my time.
I want to talk to the judge who saw Alex Kirshner come up in court and probably thought, one, he's either totally innocent of any infraction because of just his sheer demeanor, or he's killed 200 people and he has them lined up.
I'm just saying,
anyway,
somebody with some time on their hands and a willingness to file a public records request needs to do the business.
I got to know about this. Was the cop mad at you? Was the cop mean to you?
No, it was fine. It was fine.
It was transactional.
Two Americas.
I mean, it was a. I
Two
think
Americas
the police officers with signaling.
I'm filing for three. This isn't even the other one.
I think that with signaling, that's like when an NFL ref calls defensive holding. Like it's not personal, but they're just.
Was
they
it
can't,
a lane change signal, or was it a signal to stop, or a lane?
I think
change
it was a lane
signal.
Change signal. I think it was a lane change signal. I was.
Were
I was
you
about
on an
20.
Interstate or a highway?
I was on probably a 35 mile an hour road.
Were you speeding at the same time?
You might be doing more interrogation than the judge did that day.
No, at this point, I'm a little curious as to why he pulled you
over. I bet Nokian is thrilled with this ad read. I bet our listeners
are
thrilled with this, too,
who
tuned in to listen to a college
football
show.
You know why? Because if you had Nokian tires, your lane change probably would have been a lot smoother and you wouldn't have got it pulled over by the fuzz.
Thank you. Perfect way to wrap that up. Fellas, before the season, we buried a time capsule. What we did was...
I think we just buried an advertiser too.
Made a series of predictions about the 2023 season and agreed to put it underground and dig it back up after the season and see how we did. And also, you know, maybe form some conclusions about what we learned, how this season challenged our prior beliefs, and what lessons we might take forward.
Alex, did your school,
from what we learned this
season. Did your elementary school do this in 2000? Mind it.
I think that we didn't literally bury time capsules, but I remember in like kindergarten and first grade. So yeah, 2000. Good point. We did write like some kind of little worksheet, and then it was given to us in fifth grade when we left elementary school.
Okay. Yeah. No. My elementary school. Yes, Godfrey. My elementary school buried a time capsule. However, I'm not entirely sure if and when it was dug up. Because I could be totally making this up, but I seem to remember the plan was to dig it up in 2020. And then, you know, I also changed elementary schools after kindergarten. So I don't know.
Wait, is this a bit that you didn't tell me about before the air? Were you guys what grade were you in the year 2000?
In the year 2000, I was in third grade.
I was in...
No, second grade. Because when...
was in second grade in the fall of 2001, which I remember for sad reasons.
Yeah, when that thing happened in 2001, I was in third grade.
So I was in first grade in 2000. Yeah. Anyway, back to college football. We're doing a really great job staying on target this week.
It's January. Please.
The third grade. You were in the third grade.
The Heisman finalist picks that we made before the season. Oh, and by the way, I want to thank our listener, Benson S., who graciously tracked these and even was so kind about it. Like, emailed me to say, hey, would you mind if I kept a spreadsheet where I track this? Here's the sheet. I'm going to put it on Reddit. Yeah. Like, I appreciate this. Like, this is MVP work by Benson. The Heisman finalists that we picked coming into the year, Steven and I had Caleb Williams. All three of us had Marvin Harrison Jr. being a finalist. Steven and I had Michael Penix Jr. as a finalist, which worked out. And Richard had Drake May. So everybody got at least one. Steven and I got two guys correct because we had Penix and Marvin Harrison Jr. Jaden Daniels obviously wins the award. Bo Nix was also a finalist. I think the main thing to glean from this is that we all thought that, like, Richard, you had Jordan Travis as a Heisman finalist as well, and you had Drake May. I think you were onto something with Jordan Travis, and he kind of should have been a Heisman finalist. If on one hand you're going to kick a team out of the playoff because he's hurt, and on the other hand you're not even going to say he's a Heisman finalist, a little bit of a weird tension between those two things. I think most people thought that Caleb Williams and Drake May, who are going to be the top two quarterbacks picked in this draft, would have a bit more of an impactful senior year. Richard, what do you take away from the fact that the slam dunk talk, pretty much slam dunk, no offense to Jaden Daniels, but they're going to be the first two quarterbacks picked, that neither of them was able to make any hay in their final season in college football?
And, you know, as we talk about, and as Godfrey loves to talk about, some of it's the inherent flaw in the award. You know, the other is the, in a good way, kind of, the exposure and shining a light on a team game, right? Like, both of these two quarterbacks leave college football, and the only thing they have to show for it is Caleb Williams' division championship. Marvin Harrison Jr. never beat Michigan. Like, you know, it happens.
Well, I mean, Jaden Daniels, the winner, you know, the context around LSU right now is that Brian Kelly wasted a Heisman quarterback.
Right.
It's funny. It's funny how this award,
I don't know that that's
reverse engineer it to the team. I'm sorry, Alex.
Steven, you talk to a lot more, I think, Louisianans in your day-to-day life than I do, so I'm not going to like say you're wrong about this, but is there not...
Sometimes unwillingly.
I feel like there's an LSU sentiment that is like, it's less Brian Kelly wasted this guy because he did bring him, but it's more like Jaden Daniels prevented us from falling into a ditch like the likes of which Florida is in right now. And like he stabilized things at a moment of some turmoil.
I mean, I'm not going to argue that. I would just invite the LSU quotient that I know listens to this show to contact Alex Kirshner and figure out whether or not you have an optimist view of what happened to LSU this year, or you were absolutely incensed and wanted to like put Matt House in some sort of third world prison by October.
Because remember, LSU has had a version of this before. And guess what happened? It's one of the best football teams we've seen in the last 20 years.
They are weirdly more convinced than ever that Brian Kelly will eventually get them a national title, which doesn't mean anything to them. Might mean a ton to Kelly. But they are also holding the night. And the reason I say that is that they are confident that Kelly is a good hire, that getting rid of Ed was a good thing. But at the same time, 19 is the standard, Like, they are not happy with what happened this year, and they are pissed off that they wasted a Heisman quarterback, and, you know, they didn't even go to the conference championship game.
Before the year, we picked a group of five preseason player of the year. I took Austin Reed from Western Kentucky. Godfrey took Frank Harris from UTSA. Richard, you kind of fudged it, and you took Frank Gore Jr. and Curtis Rourke, Southern Miss running back, quarterback. Fudging it is, of course, fine.
Jesus.
That was a cool pick, though. Curtis, like, good for you that was for cool, doing
yeah,
it.
Yeah, because Curtis got hurt and had a horrible season.
If you're going to strike out,
this is what
like
I want to talk about.
Around.
Like, my biggest takeaway from this preseason, and I would say that the actual G5 player of the year, we didn't award one postseason. Diego Pavia from New Mexico State, not Vanderbilt, would be an intriguing pick just because he was a ton of fun. There was not like one way above the rest G5 quarterback this year. I would say that Kimani Vidal from Troy, the running back, who led them to another really good season, might have been
the best pick. It's hard to sell him because of the way that Troy, like, they were still a defensive first team.
Yeah, but their offense figured it out. Because they didn't have the same defense.
Yeah. And looked better against, yes. Like down the stretch, figure some shit out. Yes. I agree with you, but I just think it's a hard sell.
I will say this.
I don't know how you determine this, by the way. We just kind of.
No, we're just talking about how we think it materialized.
No, I also think that obviously Southern Miss was, bad is one way to put it this season. But look, at the end of the day, you go through it. Frank Gore was, I think, top 15 in the country in carries per game. Or not carries per game, carries total. And he did not play in a conference championship game, nor did he play in a bowl game. Lord knows, my delicate sensibilities still love a bell cow running back. So shout out to Frank Gore Jr., who I don't want to say is a uniquely singular college running back this day and age, but one of a continued last of a dying breed college football running back.
He's been in college football as long as Frank Gore Sr. was in the NFL. He's been in college again for like 20 years.
Been in college football for a long time, so guys must hate him by default.
Three or four. Probably not 20.
He played quarterback.
Godfrey, it only applies. He did play quarterback. He did play quarterback in 2021. Yes, the get a job mantra only applies to quarterbacks who are taking up developmental opportunities from younger players. That's
Alex Kirshner, job killer.
Maybe that ninth year
denying
tight end
people their
well.
Education.
No, he's been hurt
typical
a lot.
Conservative.
There is a ninth year tight
from,
end.
He's from
coming up this year.
He's from Western Pennsylvania. It tracks.
Probably has six kids.
Defensive player of the year. Our three picks. I took Abdul Carter from Penn State. Godfrey took Harold Perkins Jr. from LSU. Richard took Jojon Newton from Illinois. We wound up all agreeing that we kind of gave this to the duo of Byron Murphy and Tavondre Sweat.
Oh, we did?
Yeah, we
doled this out before bowl season. And I think we all feel reasonably good about that.
Yeah.
Abdul Carter was awesome for Penn State. Like, he was great.
As was
he
Johnny.
A first round NFL pick. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so like,
It's still
not
crazy
like,
to me that Penix had his arguably the best game of his college career against that front and like that in that moment.
Well, yeah, he was serious. Texas covered those guys well, and he's still throwing them.
Yeah, it just doesn't make sense to me.
So, Richard, I want to give the floor to you because I know what Godfrey's going to say here, which is, you dumbasses, how could you mess this up? Where do you ultimately come down on LSU's usage of Harold Perkins Jr. this year? He was the most hyped defensive player in the country, and then it just didn't really happen.
Ironically, before Richard starts, Harold Perkins was getting a Heisman push from LSU media before another LSU player actually won the Heisman this year. That's how long ago August was.
Where I come down on it is Matt House, Jacksonville Jaguars linebacker coach, is a sentence that I am going to be thinking about for quite some time. this offseason.
Well, you know, he might draft him as a linebacker.
Matt House, no longer LSU's defensive coordinator, is another indication of maybe how Brian Kelly felt about the way that Harold Perkins Jr. was deployed and played this year.
For Harold Perkins,
sometimes you
Perkins's, you know, complicity in this whole saga, I will say, and I brought this up when he was really good as a freshman, and I will bring it up again as I continue to watch his maturation as a player. Obviously, insanely athletically gifted. Want to see how he continues to mature playing the run. It's a thing that a defensive player up front has to do. It's not sexy. It's pretty boring. It's kind of the thing that you roll your eyes at when you have a player like him who has the ability to rush the passer like he can do. But.
All right. So the game of the year, we all agreed that it wound up being Washington, Oregon, part one. And, you know, obviously, like, the Rose Bowl was great. And, you know, there were some really good postseason games. But regular season game of the year, Oregon and Washington in Seattle, I think was the best game of the year. Here were our picks before the year. Some of these did a little better than others. I had Bedlam, Oklahoma against Oklahoma State in Stillwater for the last time. That was not a bad pick. I mean, I don't think that it was game of the year, but I feel pretty good about it. Oklahoma State won by a possession and rushed the field. And so that was fine. Where I did not shine.
That's a top 10 game, Alex.
It was a good game. I would say that I didn't win, but I picked it well. It was respectable.
Right.
South Alabama versus Troy did not really work out for me as the G5 game of the year pick. Troy won that game 28-10. South Alabama fell to sub 500 at the time. I don't believe South Alabama made a bowl game this season. It does jumble your brain quick, as you recall in the moment. Godfrey, you had the SEC championship.
Which was a good game, not game of the year. But
now, you thought it would be
Georgia
versus
incorrect
LSU.
Pick. Yeah, I thought it was. Yeah. I thought it would be a Georgia-LSU rematch in which a better Jaden Daniels. I'm not sitting here copying the fact that I thought Jaden Daniels would become Heisman caliber necessarily, but that a more seasoned, better coach, better version of Brian Kelly LSU would come and try and close that gap against Georgia in the SEC championship. Obviously, that did not happen. And then I also, I think as a caveat, Alex, in the notes, I wrote maybe Texas A&M, but that doesn't make sense. I don't understand.
I believe that you were referring to the idea that Texas A&M might get somebody this year, and that might be cool. Did not happen.
Well, they got somebody. It was just their fucking coach. So
yes. Now, Richard, you had an interesting little slate of picks here. You had Michigan versus Penn State if Penn State beats Ohio State, which they didn't. And then you went to that game and, well, it was hyped. It wasn't good. You did have Florida State versus Clemson. And that was like, that was a great game. And if it broke differently in that overtime, think about how much differently.
Oh, man.
We would have perceived so many things about the season if that game had broken differently. Like, we probably wouldn't be talking about Clemson as in a state of existential crisis if they'd won that game. And it also would have saved the playoff committee the trouble of having to completely screw Florida State. It would
have, you wouldn't have had Florida State in the existential crisis.
Dabo Swinney had the opportunity to do the funniest thing possible, and he did not.
Didn't happen.
First coach fired. This is a fun one to look back on. Godfrey, you just teased to the splitzone.com premium shows. You were just doing business. And then we talked about this in some more detail. Richard and I both had Neil Brown as the first fired Power 5 coach.
Swing and a miss. What was
everybody had
what
that.
Was the thing they said?
Everyone in the country
what
had
was
that.
The rallying cry they had all year 14? What was it? They were like, they made a rallying cry over the fact that everybody picked them last to win the Big 12.
Yeah.
Give this to Neil Brown. He sat at a table at Big 12 Media Days in the summer and was clearly incensed, mad that people picked West Virginia to be the last place team in the Big 12 and just flat out said, we are not going to be that bad. We are not going to finish last in this league. Like, made the case for all the experience that they had on defense, talked about some of their offensive strengths that he thought would help them overcome kind of an uncertain quarterback situation. And then they did it and they won 8 games. And also the basketball coach became a little bit more of a problem for West Virginia.
Yeah, more of a pressing.
Than
we found
Neil
out
Brown
it was did. Really, really hard to get fired from West Virginia.
Yeah. So well done by Neil Brown. Fair play. You were right, Neil. And we, which is both Richard and me specifically, and just about everybody, were wrong on that. G5, first coach fired. Richard, you had Danny Gonzalez, New Mexico.
Close.
Good.
That was close. I don't believe that he was actually the first coach
fired spiritually, in the G5. That's closer to the pin than you guys.
Actually, I don't have it on our cheater who was the first, but he was fired. Obviously, Jimbo Fisher was the first Power 5 coach fired for something other than scandal, for something other than Pat Fitzgerald.
Oh, yeah. Other than
or,
scandal.
Or
yeah,
Mel
yes,
Tucker.
Yes,
yeah.
Or Patty.
Which, you know, we're not gonna add that into the prediction quotient going forward. Though we could pick.
I don't think you have to add it into the prediction quotient. I think you just bake it in as a known because, you know, gestures at the sport.
Yeah, I'm not trying to run up the score, but I think when I teased a split zone duo, I led with here's how the Fisher thing would unfold. But I also I'm trying to like kind of give my what do you do in golf when you score against yourself? Like I had it happening earlier because I remember drawing it out certainly before November of how it could all break.
Yeah,
because
it was Veterans Day, right about.
Yeah, so I had the Fisher thing for sure, but it transpired on a longer timeline than I predicted.
I had Sean Elliott, Georgia State, as first Group of Five coach fired, and I do think that this is a good one to go back on postmortem. They won 7 games, including a bowl game. I think that compared to what I and many thought they would be, it was a pretty solid year for them. But I got to tell you, I'm not really going back on a general posture of pessimism about them, given the way it all unfolded. They lost 5 in a row to close before winning their bowl game against Utah State. They did not wind up being even like a flip competitive against the top class of the Sun Belt. And they went 7-6, which was his record in his, I think, second year there. Yeah. So, like,
after
looking for actual
game,
progress,
Alex,
is hard.
Yeah. The team that you were predicting showed up against Georgia Southern and stayed. They had a really strong early run. I would honestly feel fine if you slotted this in for your 24 prediction. I feel like just.
Or they just love
the
guy.
As I do
the
G5 in my head real fast, I think it's definitely a top fiver. I was smiling when you started the segment because how is it not Ryan Silverfield? Like,
because
I believe that you picked Sean Elliott and then waged a campaign of hate.
That's the other
against
thing.
Memphis.
That's the other one that's just baked in. That one's in the walls.
I think everyone listening is like, how did it wait? It wasn't Memphis? Like,
the thing is, Memphis was at least like a pretty quality team for the whole of the season. And
which is, it's even stranger because you kept saying he was going to get fired.
I really thought reading tea leaves that they were going to fire him at the end of 2022. It just seemed that way. And then apparently they didn't want to pay that buyout or they didn't want to go into the market. But like, it just really looked, if you put things together, like their supposed ambitions for football, the way they talked about urgency after they didn't get into the Big 12 and how disappointing they were, really seemed like they were going to. They didn't.
The talent not firing him, Alex, and the talent bleed. So they didn't fire him and then the talent bleed of the AAC teams leaving for the Big 12. I know Memphis wanted to be a part of that migration, but it will benefit them, I think, maybe in the short term to look like a Tiffany program because it's really just them and Tulane.
Yeah.
UTSA is going to take a step back. A step back.
I mean, we'll see. We'll see.
My boy Frank's gone.
No more Frank Harris there. Although he is now, Frank Harris, I saw, is like getting involved with the UTSA NIL collective. That's his new gig.
Good.
So they still got Frank kind of in the fold,
That's
which is
smart,
nice to see.
I mean, yeah.
He's smart. Yeah, a guy who understands modern
first. I hope
it stays
rolling in San Antonio. I shout out.
Coach hired up. I had either James Franklin or Jim Harbaugh. Correct. Richard, Richard, you had Bob Chesney. Richard, you had Garrett Riley. You were wrong. But I think you also probably thought Bob Chesney. Godfrey, you had Bob Chesney from Holy Cross. He gets the James Madison job. But you also said Godfrey.
I picked it. Look, to be honest, again, Mulligan, I picked him for BC, but he got
the process on. I will defend to the hilt the process on Garrett Riley. We just didn't get the result. And that's okay. It happens.
Garrett Riley will run it back for a second year, it looks like, as Clemson's offensive coordinator, and they will hope for better results. Though that
Louisiana
roster
Tech
overhaul
will open next year, he can get that job.
That roster overhaul. First Group of Five coach fired next year. Let me put it down right now for Sonny Cumbie. Feels like a great pick. If you want
to
do that early in the year,
make a change. I don't know.
bad situation at Louisiana Tech. But okay, so that was the view of who would get hired up. The full list of coaches who get hired up to other schools. I mean, I guess we're not going to count like Sharon Moore in here as a promotion. But Kurt Cignetti from James Madison to Indiana, Willie Fritz, Tulane to Houston, Jeff Lebby, offensive coordinator at Oklahoma to Mississippi State, Fran Brown, UGA DBs to Syracuse head coach, Trent Bray promotion is listed here. Thank you, Benson, keeping our spreadsheet to head coach when Jonathan Smith left. Jonathan Smith, sort of a promotion. I don't know if I don't like kind of a preemptive one before Oregon State loses power conference status. I hate it, but whatever. Spencer Danielson, interim to coordinator to head coach at Boise State. Sean Lewis, Colorado offensive coordinator to San Diego State. So a number of situations that could have been fired, could have been good answers.
Fired as an OC, hired as a head coach.
Always fun when that happens, when you can turn around a nice little pivot like that. Also a few more I think came in late, like Wyoming promoted the defensive coordinator Jay Sawvell to replace Craig Bull when he retired. So cheers to all who improved their professional standings in the course of this coach carousel. Conference champions. We each picked a few. I had Ohio State winning the Big Ten. I had USC winning the Pac-12. I had Ohio winning the MAC.
Who got closest? Ohio?
Damn, y'all.
Well, I guess Ohio Richard, State, right? Ohio State. Yeah. Richard, you had Georgia winning the SEC.
Oh shit! I said so. Yes, Georgia did not win. Georgia did not win the SEC.
Yeah, I know exactly. Yeah.
Well, sorry, I was looking at something else. Sorry.
Richard had Tulane winning the AAC, which kind of a golf clap on a nice effort there. But they lose to SMU in the conference championship game, so no there. But you had Florida State winning the ACC. That's well done. You correctly called that. Godfrey, you were the best of the group here. You had Texas and Liberty winning the Big 12 and Conference USA. You missed on the Sun Belt with South Alabama. That went to Troy.
And I said that was going to happen. If you go back and listen to the Capsule show, because I was hedging so bad, I knew it was going to be Troy or South Al. And I said, I hate picking against everything that Troy's doing right now, but I'm gonna side against, because they had such a reasonable amount of personnel turnover, you would think there would be regression, and there wasn't. And that was my fault.
We each picked teams to go from ranked preseason to unranked. TCU for me, that's a bullseye. Godfrey, you had Tennessee and Ole Miss, which
both
finished
ranked, didn't they?
Tennessee finished ranked, and it was a striking miss on Ole Miss. I think like kind of directionally true about Tennessee that they were not what they were the prior year, but big miss on Ole Miss for you.
I feel like I would have been game off on Tennessee being unranked.
Yeah.
So I don't feel bad.
You had Oregon State and North Carolina, and congratulations, North Carolina finished the season unranked. Well done. Playoff fours. I had Georgia winning the whole thing. I had Ohio State, Penn State, and Alabama. So I missed 3 out of 4, including the champ. Godfrey, you had LSU, USC, Ohio State, and Texas. You had USC as the winner. So you missed 3 out of 4, including the champ. Richard, you had USC winning the whole thing. Not very good. You had UGA, Penn State, and Florida State. So literally all three of us missed 3 out of 4 on the playoff and did not get the national champion right. Actually kind of refreshing, isn't it? Like that the playoff, I mean, this was not, I want to push back on any narrative that this was a especially parody prone season in the sport.
Alabama was like, in the national championship game.
Like Alabama they weren't in the playoff. But Washington and Michigan and Texas being in the playoff was new. Only one of those teams had ever played in the playoff before, and it had been 7 years since Washington had been in 2016. If anyone tries to sell you snake oil about how this year was proof that parity is coming back to the sport or NIL is leveling the playing field or whatever.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely
That is not happening. Yeah. But maybe we've got a window for more teams than just like the absolute top 2, 3, 4, 5 recruiters to win national championships.
It's good that the SEC wasn't in the title game. This is not a bit. It's just good because it creates variety. I think having a year out of it, it's anticipation building. I think it changes conversation and narrative.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah. Steven, would you
like
say
a recalibration?
Do you feel like it's important that college football is a national sport is the point that you're making?
Always, my friend. And
pretty cool that they had the playoff semifinal on the West Coast, isn't it?
This is the lamest attempt to justify the Rose Bowl that you've had yet.
No, I disagree. There are a lamer. If we're out of here.
Am I mistaken that this was the first championship game without the SEC since the first playoff championship game, Oregon and Ohio State? There's an SEC opponent in every other championship game.
I think you are correct.
Who cares?
We might. There have been 10 of them. I think you're right. I think you're correct.
Yeah, it's good. Like, this isn't just because I have beef with SEC PR, but like / ESPN. it is good that you create dynamic, like, interesting. Like, it got mushy in the middle. The reason you guys can't remember is because, like, oh, it's like Alabama and Clemson played 11 times. Like,
Five years in a row?
Dude, it was so, like, nobody wanted that. Like, yeah, variety was good. Washington being in the title game was awesome. Michigan winning it, like, believe it or not, like, from an analyst standpoint, is a really good thing for college football. It's a really good thing for the Midwest. It's a really good thing for the Big Ten. Like, this helps.
With Michigan, it's also a really good thing for New Jersey and Los Angeles, but that's a Michigan joke. You get it.
Zing! Look at his shit. He's got him.
Yeah, you want to talk about nationwide sport? There's your nationwide champion. Ohio State, you're up next.
This is sort of a double-edged sword perception that I partially had challenged this year, partially had validated, and I don't know exactly what to make of it. You know, we've spoken a bit about how the portal world can allow you to build really quickly, like USC did in Lincoln's first year, 2022, and it can also lead to things falling apart really, 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 really fast. I think we saw how it can fall apart to some extent because of TCU. Not with transfer defections in their case, but just in that they lost, you know, they had a Cinderella year. They go to the national championship game. All of your favorite TCU players move on, and they become a lousy team, a mediocre middle of the pack Big 12 team this year.
That's going to happen.
And
more.
It's going to happen. It's going to be part of the deal. TCU doesn't map perfectly onto this theory because the reason that they fell apart was not that everyone transferred. It was that their best players ran out of eligibility.
Right, but spiritually, what you're getting at is going to start happening. Like, you're going to get a team who flies in as an 8, who wins 2 games, and then drops off the face of the earth. Like, that's going
to
happen.
And Washington might be next, by the way. I mean, I expect Washington is going to continue to be serious in the Big Ten for a long time. I think they can do that, but like, I don't think it's going to happen for them next year.
You and I may differ.
Yeah, I think they're going to be in trouble next year. I think they're going to be in trouble in the same way that TCU is. Now, on the other side of that, though, I mean, we talked about how quickly you could build. Maybe you can't build with such a great foundation if you build rapidly. I mean, you know, obviously Colorado is the obvious example of this, and happy to say that we did not miss on that one. I think what happened was with a detour was what we thought would happen. But like USC, we really thought could win the national championship this year. And it turned out that they were not certainly well coached enough on one side of the ball, and probably not physical enough either. I mean,
they
did not have Michigan or Georgia or Alabama level line play, not even close. Even if Alex Grinch had been Phil Parker and they'd had the best defensive coordinator in the land, they just didn't seem to have it. And so as we get more years, Godfrey, into this new era of the sport, I guess I'm still not any closer to figuring out how effectively you can just slap together a national champion in a year or two.
Yeah, I would agree with that. But I don't know if it's portal so much as it is how you manage and coach the portal. And I think what coaches are going to be really, really reticent to admit, even off the record in the offseason conversations we're all about to have in the coming months, is no one's just going to cop to the fact like, hey, we don't really know how to balance some of these relationship dynamics, team chemistry, and coach up somebody you just brought in to so many new faces like a Florida State. And by the way, I don't buy the argument at all that like, oh, they didn't make the playoffs, so they fell apart. No, like that's, if Florida State had something to play for and had been bumped down in a 12-team playoff, they wouldn't have fallen apart. That was the system, not the program, that caused the failure there, in my opinion. Coaches are going to have to learn more and get more information and more anecdotal evidence and more experience in bringing 7 guys in who are going to be 7 starters this fall. That's not normal. And this is something fundamentally new. And so I'm not yet ready to say you can't flip a national title winner in 2 years. Maybe you can. Maybe we just don't know how to do it yet.
Can I take you guys for one big off-season prediction as we embark on this next phase? Didn't put this
like
in the notes.
Prediction
so I'm kind
of like something that's going to happen between now and September.
Yeah, give me a big college football storyline that you think is going to emerge between now and the next time we play games.
Ooh,
because it's talking season.
No,
starting,
it is.
Looking at my watch, it's talking season starting right now. So we're kind of heading into the long winter of keeping ourselves warm by theorizing.
With the fire of the takes to keep us warm. The long off season. I got one.
Ohio
State national champion.
I think that this is going to be
Ohio State Georgia national title.
This is going to be an off season of major. Like Ryan Day, do or die, like lightest cameras, brightest cameras on him at Big Ten Media Days stuff. He is, I think, out of excuses this year. And he's had a really solid offseason, by the way, to start. Like reasonable people can differ on what they think of Will Howard, but they've flipped over some important pieces on their coaching staff that a lot of their fans thought really needed to be flipped. They got Caleb Downs.
National champion.
Michigan.
It is national championship.
Is equipped for a step back year.
It is national championship or bust.
I think it's beat Michigan and make the playoff. Like if they were to beat Michigan and go to the title game and lose to Georgia.
Well, I forget.
I think there's room to beat Michigan and win a few.
Now you have to win 3 or 4 games to win a national championship, which I also sort of forgot.
All right, this is a weird wait, but we're doing stuff that goes into the fall. So,
but we're just talking about what's the offseason thing. Yeah, I think it's going to be an offseason of a lot of Ohio State hype. That's what I think we should look for.
I think it's going to be an offseason of, I'll try and be positive. I think as we go to this draft cycle, there will be, I think we've been getting there, Richard, year over year of big dumb NFL media. There's a lot of good NFL media. We're friends with them. A lot of smart shit that happens and like really good ways to enhance your viewing of the pro game. I think they've been trending towards embracing and even celebrating some of the stuff that happens at the collegiate level, like with quarterbacks specifically. Whereas like when I started at SB Nation in 2012, like the Pete Priscos of the world were just denouncing and shitting upon popular college offensive systems as like they're dumbing down quarterbacks. They're making it worse. Like Jared Goff was held up as this example of like, we've got to teach him how to play the pro game as if that's not been the case as if that hadn't been the case previously.
yeah.
Like, I think the schematic marriage and sort of familiarity between the two levels will continue to get closer and closer. That's a positive thing in my opinion. Falcons sign Justin Fields, Braden sign. Richard, do you have one? I mean, I could say, some dumb thing is going to happen with a coach between now and September. Is that what you want, Alex? Over under
1.5 firings, parting of the ways, terminations, for cause or kind of cause.
That's a good question.
Over under 1.5.
Two.
It's a good number, Richard, because I would say over a half, but I don't know about over.
Right, so
1.5.
I just said two out loud. So I guess I'm taking the over.
I'll go under. So are we counting like someone decides they can't do it anymore?
Like no. Like a fire, problems? Like not like a
no, because no,
firing, parting of the ways, a scandal, basically a scandal or two.
Hey, you guys want to get sued? Who's most likely? Just kidding. Don't say it. Offline. Offline, Steven. Offline.
No, I'm not.
That's
I'm
the
not.
End
I'm
of the show.
I'm still trying. No, I'm still trying to give you. I'm trying to wrap this up with something bold.
My kicks.
It's just going to be another long fucking year of people blaming a lot of shit on players getting money.
Well, yeah, but that's like minus 1,000.
I know, that's normal. I know.
Oh, you know, Richard, at some point this offseason, isn't the SEC going to kind of like have to get off the pot about their scheduling and standings model?
Oh, I got one.
Isn't that going to be the thing?
I got one. I think some bowls are going to get whacked.
Ooh.
Because like, the schedule hasn't been like locked in yet for y'all realize like it's January 30th. This time next year, we're going to be like 5 days removed from the national title or something like that.
I'm not complaining about
that. The postseason structure is getting worse, and we haven't addressed it yet.
It's a long year for the players.
What do you mean? What do you mean not worse? I'm saying worse for like
worse for who?
Mashing all this shit together.
Okay,
all
right. Worse for who is the question?
The bowl. I don't know if all the bowls are going to make it. I think you may see some get clipped in the immediate. So okay, real fast. The simple math is like, all right, you expand the field to 12. The teams that would have gone to your like sub playoff bowls, they get sucked into the apparatus. Everyone gets sucked up, right? In terms of expand, like you're going to have playoff semis that are not bowl games. Yeah. So you're going to have a higher inventory, but you're going to have a higher amount of playoff games with the same inventory. Volume will not increase because of the 6-win thing. So I think they're going to clip some bowls. And also, like I can tell you for a fact, talking to people with bowls, if you've shown ingenuity and how to market yourself in a unique way, then you have a pretty good idea of like, you want to stick around.
Yeah.
Like,
there's
a lot that just show up. Like these sort of, I hate to say this, like I think the bowls that make it God are some of the ones that cater to the G5s unless they start doing something different. But also like ESPN has to slot all this shit. They literally have to put it. And then now we're going to have extra playoff weekends.
I'm telling you, bowls,
the calendar stuff's going to get, it's going to get squirrely.
The mid-tier bowls that live forever will be the ones that do the best job making corporate tie-ins. Like,
yes.
Like, I'm not saying the Pop-Tarts bowl will
be
immortal.
Get ready to learn cheese it, buddy.
But like, no, but like the Pop-Tart thing was hilarious. And like, it went viral on the internet. And like, Pop-Tart's going to want to keep sponsoring that game. Duke's Mayo is going to keep on sponsoring that
game. Dude, my level of viral now is when the Washington Post calls me and they're like, what can you tell us about the Pop-Tarts Bowl? That's when I know it crossed a particular threshold, right? I think to Alex's point, those bowls are going to be fine. As you suck up those 9-win teams into the playoff system and it leaves behind, like, we need someone for the Cheez-It Bowl, I do think, like, hopefully a team that, like, off the top of my head, like, let's say Troy or Tulane or UTSA has like a 10-win year or a 9-win year, but they don't win their comp. Like, hopefully those teams get rewarded more by going to better bowl games as exhibitions, which makes sense because their fans are going to want to spend money on the tickets, right? Does that make sense?
Probably so. I think that something in the next,
this is,
I don't
all
know if this will be this off.
This was not in our show notes.
No, this was not planned.
I'm trying to think of
this
something spontaneous to predict here. I think the bowls are going to see a substantial shift. Is that that's my pick? The non-playoff affiliated bowl.
I agree, and the one thing that I would add is that it's important to note that it's going to be a shift and not a death. Like I don't think that everything is hunky dory with bowl games right now. Like I think you'd have to have your head in the sand to not acknowledge that. A lot of players, especially those with NFL futures, clearly do not value these things very highly if they're not for a national championship.
Correct.
And that's not good for like the competitive enterprise of the thing. Like it's not
a really
good
easy way to solve that too.
Yeah. And it is obviously happening.
They're going to build in NIL stipends, Alex. I think that's going to be part of it.
I think
just get a bonus to play.
I do think that some of this is never going to change. Cause I think some of it is on the NFL agents who tell their guys, oh, like, you know, don't play in this game because, you know, it's going to hurt your draft stock. And like, if you're a day three running back, should you really, like, are you really helping yourself by not playing in this nationally televised game that a decent number of people are likely to watch? Like, I'm not sure about that, but I think it's just risk management by NFL types.
So the Bulls should pay him.
No, I agree. And where this is going to go, because they're not dying because people still watch, like the death of the bowl is not something that you should believe if anyone tells you about it. But you're going to have to update some things because clearly they are being devalued, and
we just acknowledging the obvious. Off-season show about this. This is going to have to be an off-season show, Alex, because like the ratings, I dug into this for the post a little bit. The ratings are super hard to differentiate because they changed the fucking kickoff times. At like 1 year, you'd be like, the Military Bowl did a 0.08, but it was a Tuesday at 11 a.m. But this year, it's on a Wednesday night at 7 p.m. So you're going to have a bigger audience. But then they'll say, but this team was in it. Like it's ESPN has to create some clarity for itself if they're going to prop up this mini exhibition game.
That's our show.
Get us out of here.
Before we go, I don't think we've mentioned this on this feed. The Blindside commentary track with Steven, with Ryan Nanny, a critical rewatching of Michael Lewis's book turned film starring Sandra Bullock is now up at splitzoneduo.com. It is a hit. People love it. And by it, I mean the track, not the film. You should check it out.
If you've never felt white guilt, let me teach you how.